Hey everyone, I'm Rob Stats Guerrera.
And I'm Michael Kist.
And you need to subscribe to the SB Nation NFL Show, SB Nation's daily NFL podcast that covers the National Football League from every angle.
On Mondays, we'll break down all the action and news from Sunday's games and hand out awards for special plays and performances.
On Tuesdays, we reset the state of the league, adjust our power rankings, and cover the biggest topics you need to hear about.
On Wednesday of the SB Nation NFL Show, we break down the game at a deeper level and analyze the best quarterback and defensive performances along with some of the best analysts in the industry.
On Thursday, we'll look ahead to the biggest games of the weekend and point you to key matchups to watch for.
And on Friday, you'll get all the tools you need to win big money with odds, betting lines, fantasy, and daily fantasy tips to prepare you for the week ahead.
So go search the SB Nation NFL Show on your favorite podcast app, subscribe now, and join us 5 days a week. The SB Nation NFL Show, SB Nation's daily NFL podcast you can't miss.
Hey everybody, and welcome back to From Complex to Queens, Mason Avenue's Minor League Podcast. I'm Steve Saipa, and I will be joined shortly by Lucas Vlahos, Ken Levin, and Thomas Henderson, the Mason Avenue Minor League team. But since it is Christmas, we decided that we're just going to have a kind of compilation episode. It's the end of December, so you know what that means. New year, new prospect list. Normally, the way we do things, we'll release our top prospect list as a trickle, basically a guy every day or so. And then at the end, we'll have a compilation of everything, you know, who ranked who where, bonus sleepers, things like that. This year, I decided to just switch it up a little bit, and instead, we're going to talk about our sleepers first. So that is what this episode is going to be all about. 2021 prospect list sleepers. So the first player that I want to talk about today is a hitter, Andres Renault. He was signed as an international free agent out of Caracas, Venezuela as a 16-year-old kid in 2015. And he wasn't considered a particularly highly regarded kid. He signed about a month after the 2015-2016 international signing period started and for a relatively small amount. So he didn't actually suit up professionally for the Mets that year. But he was assigned to the DSL, the Dominican Summer League, in 2016, and he didn't exactly impress. He hit a very underwhelming 132, 264, 160 in 39 games. So they had him repeat the DSL in 2017, which is obviously not what you want to see, but at the same time, it's not super uncommon for less heralded players who show that they're not really ready yet, and obviously he wasn't. So, in his second year, he hit a very much improved 270, 359, 383 in 36 games. And the Mets are kind of weird with their assignments. Sometimes they'll be very aggressive, even overly aggressive with some players. And then with other guys, they'll be very conservative. And in Renault's case, they were pretty conservative. And they had him stay in the Dominican Summer League for a third consecutive year in a row. And basically, in that third year, he demolished the competition. He hit 333, 420, 573 in 53 games. And he basically forced the Mets to send him stateside in 2019, which they did. And they sent him to the Kingsport Mets. And there, he split catching duties with Francisco Alvarez and Wilfred Estudillo. And he did pretty well for himself. He hit 292, 328, 489 in 44 games as a catcher and a DH. And he led the team in homers, 8. He was second in slugging percentage and third in OPS. Unfortunately, there wasn't a season last year. But if there was, I think he probably would have played with the Brooklyn Cyclones. Alvarez, I would think, would have been bumped up to Columbia. And Renault and Astudillo probably would have had a timeshare behind the plate in Brooklyn, which would have took playing time away from Jose Mena, Jake Ortega, and Ariel Yera, who were the catching trio in Brooklyn. But none of them are particularly good, and none of them are considered players that are going to be going far in their career. So it probably wouldn't have really mattered much if their playing time got taken away. So at the plate, Renault, he's pretty closed, and he holds his hands high. He swings with a big leg kick. He has a big load, and that is basically how he generates his power. It's solidly average bat speed, decent amount of power. He's an okay eye, a fair eye, and he's been able to limit the strikeouts thus far in his career. But he doesn't really walk at a particularly high rate. And I could see him as a guy that starts striking out a lot more against more advanced pitching. So working on, obviously, not doing that and or drawing more walks to compensate is definitely a big key to his future. Defensively, he was the worst of the three Kingsport catchers in 2019. He's a big kid. He's 6 foot even, 250 pounds. So he's not the most mobile guy. He is an easy target for pitchers, and he has a strong arm and accurate arm, so he's not completely chopped liver behind the plate. But moving around is important, and it's especially important to him because sticking at catcher is going to be really key to any future value that he might have. He doesn't need to be Johnny Bench or anything like that, but blocking and framing, that kind of stuff, needs to improve. Don't get me wrong, when I saw him in Kingsport to the eye, he didn't look bad or anything like that. With the blocking, framing, I couldn't really, you know, that's out of my pay grade. But to my eye, he didn't look terrible or anything like that. But obviously, as he moves up the minor league ladder, he'll be in batteries with more advanced pitchers, with better stuff, and he's going to have to tame that stuff, for lack of better words, in order to help those pitchers and obviously help whatever team he's playing on. Now, speaking of pitchers, my sleeper pick as a pitcher for the 2021 season is a right-hander who pitched for the Columbia Fireflies, the St. Lucie Mets, and the Binghamton Rumble Ponies back when we were still able to have minor league baseball. He is a right-hander by the name of Tyler McGill. He was drafted by the Mets in the 8th round of the 2018 draft out of the University of Arizona. Initially, he went to Loyola Marymount University because that's where his brother went and they wanted to play together. But after his brother got drafted by the Padres in Tyler's freshman year, he left Marymount and he transferred to Cypress Junior College, which is a community college in California. And he was solid there in his sophomore year. And he used that success to get into the University of Arizona. And he was really bad in his junior year, which is not a good year to be bad for a college baseball player. He had a 5.55 ERA in 35 and two-thirds innings. So, understandably, he went undrafted in the 2017 draft. So, he went back to Arizona for his senior year. And basically, he spent that entire summer getting in the best shape of his life. He lost weight. He lost about 15, 20 pounds. He worked on his mechanics. He fiddled around with grips. You know, all that stuff, all those controllable metrics that you can, you know, change. And he wasn't exactly Superman in 2018 when he was able to get back on the mound for Arizona, but he was better. He had a 4.68 ERA in 32 and two-thirds innings. And the Mets noticed, and they drafted him basically as a money saver. They signed him for $50,000, and that was to a slot value of $176,000. So they saved a considerable amount of money there. And he pitched with Brooklyn that summer. He was solid. And then, as I mentioned, he spent the 2019 season at three levels, Columbia, St. Lucie, and Binghamton, and he spent most of that time in Columbia. So McGill is 6'6", 230. That's like perfect for a pitcher. He throws from a high three-quarter arm slot with a very low effort, loose, almost slingy arm action, and it has some crossfire. And that crossfire, that angle, makes it harder for hitters to pick up and hit solidly, but that also impacts his command a bit. He misses, basically, arm side when he lets the ball go a little too early, and then glove side when he releases it a little too late. Overall, the stuff is solid. Fastball sits in the low 90s, tops out 96. It has a lot of late life and tailing action because, according to StatCast, it has a high spin rate. So that's definitely something that we like to see in 2020 baseball. And though something we don't like to see is that his command kind of comes and goes. Because of the crossfire delivery, he just really works better to the glove side, and he throws more glove side. He can throw strikes arm side when he needs to, but it's just not as precise as glove side. He pairs this fastball with a slider and a changeup, and the slider is the better of the two pitches. It's just in the mid-80s, and it flashes being an average to above-average pitch when it doesn't flatten out and it has some vertical break to it. Changeup, still pretty firm when we last saw him on the mound. It was still a pretty new addition to his arsenal, but maybe he's made some strides to it because obviously, given that there's a pandemic going on, he's had a lot of downtime. As a reliever for most of his college career, he never really needed that changeup, so it is still pretty new. So since being drafted, basically about a third of his appearances have been starts, and then two-thirds have been appearances out of the bullpen. So future is definitely going to be dependent on how that changeup develops or any other pitch that he possibly adds to his arsenal, because right now he is just basically a two-pitch pitcher. But with his frame and the fact that the mid-levels of the Mets minor league system right now doesn't really have too many pitchers that jump out at you, hopefully, you know, he's able to develop a semi-useful third pitch, and hopefully the Mets look at him as a starter and give him a solid chance before making any decisions. So, Andrés Reynolt and Tyler McGill, two guys that I hope open some eyes in 2021 and possibly make some top prospect lists in 2022, but at a minimum, they're two guys that are interesting, they have potential, and they're two guys in the system that you should just know.
Happy holidays, everyone. This is Lucas. I'm here with my personal sleepers for the Mets top 25 list. At the front, I'm going to say this was not an easy segment to put together, as I'm sure we'll discuss frequently, both in the write-ups and on the pod over the next couple of weeks. The Mets system right now just isn't great. You get past the first nine, arguably even the first six names, and then you're just kind of flipping coins. It's just not a very deep system, both due to certain poor trades in recent history, but more importantly and more concerningly, a total lack of internal development, really. The Mets haven't developed their own major league caliber pitcher since Jacob DeGrom, really. Like, David Peterson's the first one. I guess, no, Syndergaard and Mats were after DeGrom. But since that wave at the start of this contention cycle, there's been basically no more internal pitching reinforcements. And while there have been several hitters that have been spit out by the system that have improved, be it Jeff McNeil, Pete Alonso, even Andrés Giménez to a degree, there also have been plenty that have stagnated, Ahmed Rosario being the best example. And simply put, there's just not a lot in the upper minors right now. It's not to say there's not a lack of intrigue in the system. We can pontificate for a long time about why some of the DSL outfielders are interesting and whatnot, and I'm sure we will, but this is basically a long non sequitur to come back to the point that finding sleepers beyond the top 25 that we actually care about isn't exactly easy, because there just aren't a ton of great names in the system. As a result of that, my hitter, my personal sleeper, is a hitter that the Mets signed as a minor league free agent that last offseason, that being Janushi Fargas, excuse me. 80 grade name right off the bat, right? It's John, like John, and then E-S-H-W-Y Fargas. Never seen a name like that. Absolutely love it. He was an 11th round pick by the Giants in 2013. hung out in their system for 7 years, never made it past double A, and the Mets signed him as a 25-year-old last offseason because they had no upper minors outfield depth. And then obviously he didn't get to play anywhere because of COVID's cancellation of the 2020 minor league season. So just the general gist on Fargus is that he was, when this was as of 2016, when he was making some noise, maybe in the back of the 20s in the Giants list. This is from Fangraphs, plus runner, physical projection, flashes gap power, and has impact range in center field, but is extremely raw in all facets of his game. And that has basically held true to the present day. The BP put together a similar report in 2020 where Fargus has basically bounced around the outfield spots and the low minors for the Giants, playing most of the time in center field. Not a lot of power, slightly above to slightly below average offense, really just needed more experience against advanced pitching to prove that the bat wasn't going to be a problem. Now, I've really buried the lead here, right, because it's not as interesting if I put it at the start, but Fargus is really, really, really fast. So he had 50 steals at double A in 2019. He had 47 at high A in 2018, 59 across two levels in 2015, 41 across two levels in 2016. 2017, he didn't play a lot. I don't know if there was an injury involved there or if it was just a developmental stagnation and the Giants giving time to other players. But the point is that Fargus has basically an elite level skill. You never really want to comp someone to what is a major league 80, but you can think of Fargus as a player in that Billy Hamilton mode, where not great with the bat, doesn't walk a lot, not a ton of power, but when he gets on base, you know he's going, and even though you know he's going, he's still more often than not going to make it, because he's just that good at stealing bases. And he brings what will probably be at least plus, if not better, defense in center. So this is an archetype the Mets haven't really had for a good long while. Steals have obviously faded out of baseball for sabermetric reasons that are correct mathematically and strategically. But I do think steals are a really fun part of baseball just from an aesthetics point of view. And it's been disappointing over the last couple of years and the Mets haven't really had anyone who fills that role. I mean, Andrés Giménez Stoll was probably the best base stealer the Mets have had in the last 3 to 4 years. I know Hamilton was on the roster for all of 5 minutes, but it really just shows you the total lack of this skill set. And I think I could go into a very long discussion about idealized roster construction, right? And you never want to have hard and fast rules to how to build a roster, because you're going to have different talent on hand and then different talent available in any given offseason as you're putting together a team. But in general, you want to have, say, 4 to 5 dependable relievers, and then some optional guys, 4 dependable starters, and then a couple optional guys. And then as you're building out your bench, and this is obviously a bit in flux with the presence or lack of presence of the DH in the NL, which we're not quite sure of this year. But in my mind, it's always good to have someone off the bench who can steal you a base, because there are situations where perhaps stealing isn't optimal for scoring 4 runs in an inning or maximizing the number of runs you get in a given situation. But sometimes you just need that one run. You need to tie the game late. You need to take a lead late in the game. And being able to swipe a bag is a very valuable skill set, or even just having someone who can round the bases on a ball in the gap or what have you. To say nothing of the lack of center field defense on the Mets roster over the last couple of years, but we've talked about that plenty in other episodes already. So I'm not going to sit here and claim that Fargus is going to be a major league regular. He's not going to be a starting outfielder at any point. I don't think he has the bat for it. But if he could put up a WRC in the 70 to 80 range, that might even be good enough for a low-level starter. But on a contending team, that's a really nice bench piece. You have a plus defender who serves a role defensively, obviously, can back up any outfield position. And then also is a nice a weapon off the bench in certain situations, a skill set that we don't really have there at the moment. And of course, you'd have to build out the rest of the bench accordingly. You want to have actual bats in other positions, right? You want to be able to get some offense off the bench. But if you're going to add a speedster, it makes sense that it's one of your defensive guys, either your backup shortstop or your backup center fielder. And I think Vargas fits that mold really, really well. Now, whether he can actually do this is a very open question, right? Would it be better to have an actual bat on the bench? I'm sure there's an argument for that as well. Just my personal preference for a bench construction, I think Vargas is a very obvious fit. And I think there's a non-zero chance that his offense could improve. I mean, he was very raw when drafted, and who knows what happens. Maybe something clicks in the late 20s. So I really did my best to get him onto the 25th spot on my list, and I couldn't quite do it. So he's my sleeper on the hitting side. On the pitching side, it was even harder to find a sleeper, if I'm being totally honest. So I'll go with a dude I've talked about a little bit over the last couple of years, that being Matt Blackham. So Blackham's moving past, he's kind of moving into that post-prospect stage of his career, unfortunately. He was a 29th round pick in 2014 after a very down college season. He's now 27 years old, still a very small dude, only 5'10", 150 per Fangraphs, though honestly difficult to tell how accurate that those weight numbers are at any given time. But despite that small stature, he throws very hard, sits mid-90s, occasionally goes higher. But in order to get that velocity with such a small frame, he relies on a very violent delivery, and as such, his command grades in the 30s, maybe 35 on a good day. And that's led to extensive walks. He does have a curve, a slider, a changeup that are all various degrees of meh. But the total package has worked in the low minors, and then even at AA in 2018 and 2019, he struck out more than he has at least one season striking out more than 13 batters per nine at basically every stop. And he got a sample of AAA in 2019. Only 15 innings, and the rates were bad. He only struck out 6 per 9 and was still walking more than 4 batters per 9 innings. But relievers are mercurial, if nothing else, and this is a dude who has a demonstrated track record of big-time strikeouts. And a lot of the time, that just doesn't translate to the major leagues, but hell, these kind of strikeout rates are a singular attribute that many... no other pitcher in the Mets system can tout. So I'm still interested in him as a potential like eighth man, and I don't think he's going to be a real relief ace or anything like that. But I'd like to see him get some more time at AAA and perhaps get a shot as a shuttle arm this season for the Mets. Definitely a very long shot, not someone I'd be placing any real bets on, but strikeouts are cool, dude, so I'd be keeping an eye on him at least peripherally. So that's it, the two sleepers I've got, Junichi Vargas, and which I've pronounced at least three different ways now, and Matt Blackham. We'll get into the rest of the list over the next couple of weeks.
SB Nation presents the SB Nation NFL Show. 5 weekday episodes to get you through the grind of the NFL season with your favorite SB Nation community leaders. You'll get reactions to what happened on Sunday, film breakdowns, fearless takes, local expert analysis, fantasy football advice, and so much more. There's a little something for everyone on the SB Nation NFL Show. Be sure to subscribe on Apple Podcasts or your favorite podcast app to be sure you don't miss a single episode.
Hi, everyone. This is Kenny, and two sleepers or unranked guys that I'm interested in following next season are Cole Gordon, a pitcher who pitched in between Brooklyn and Columbia in 2019, and Carlos Cortez, who spent all of 2019 in the Florida State League. So at this point, we've talked about Cortez a good amount on the podcast, but the gist of it is he's an ambidextrous outfielder, which... outfield-infield prospect. He throws left-handed when he plays the outfield and right-handed when he plays the infield, which doesn't really add a ton of utility to his, you know, skill set, but, you know, is interesting. The Mets signed him as a prep player in 2016, but he didn't sign and played 2 years for South Carolina in the SEC. before the Mets drafted him in the third round of the 2018 draft and gave him a well above slot signing bonus to not return to South Carolina for his junior season. He played in Brooklyn in 2018 and, you know, hit a comfortably above average line, but with a relatively low average and with relatively little power, and then did more or less the same thing in his first full season of professional baseball in the Florida State League. He's currently playing in the Australian Baseball League for the Sydney Blue Sox, and as of the time of recording, he's 3-for-7 on the season with a double and a walk. And that's kind of why I'm interested in seeing what he looks like in the upcoming season. I've never been particularly convinced that he's going to hit as much as he needs to, given that he is limited to only second base and left field and doesn't project to, you know, provide much value defensively. So he's going to have to hit and hit a lot, or hit a fair amount and hit for a lot of power. And he's done neither so far. He's generally controlled the strike zone very well. He's struck out relatively little in his career and walked close to 10% in 2019. So there isn't room for a ton of improvement there. And at some point, he's either going to have to hit for a higher average or hit for more power, or both, ideally, in order to, you know, prove that he can stick at the upper levels of the minor leagues. But I'm really interested to see if maybe some of the extra reps he's getting in Australia right now are helpful in, you know, helping him find that next level of his offensive game. So I'm relatively interested to see Carlos Cortez next season. And I'm also interested to see Cole Gordon because, you know, I've been fond of Gordon for a long time. I spoke about him in this segment last year. He was a late convert to pitching at Mississippi State. And for somebody who hasn't been pitching all that long, he's shown a remarkable feel for spin, which isn't really something you can teach. And that's really fascinating that it's just something he can do. I would be interested to hear the story of how he learned it someday. He hasn't been pitching for a particularly long time. I think it's more or less the same argument I made last year, and I'm interested to see if, you know, maybe he makes bigger strides than you would otherwise think from a senior sign reliever, because he's got a lot left to room, a lot of room left to learn. So, yep, those are two guys that I'm interested in seeing next year.
Picking sleepers in 2020 is a bit difficult, mostly because sleepers are really, at least in my opinion, you're supposed to look at someone who's off the beaten path who can make an impact on the top 25 of a team, maybe even a top 30 if you're really getting down there. And for the Mets, there's not really a lot of people like that anyway, because their top 25 is kind of thin. I wouldn't say kind of, it is thin, especially once you get past like the top 12. 13-ish. But picking sleepers is especially hard in 2020 because we lost a year of open development to these guys, really. We lost a year of public development, I guess is a better way to put it, because normally we'd be able to watch the younger guys and see someone in rookie ball hit 300 who is a surprise, or watch a guy get a new pitch or change his motion or whatever that may be, or switch from a starter to a reliever and pop in that way. So when we were supposed to pick sleepers, the first thing I thought of was, in this instance, was picking people who could make the Mets in, not make the Mets outright because they won't do that, picking people who in 2021 have the potential to actually be a part of the Mets in Queens. What I think the Mets did in the Rule 5 draft was, in the minor league Rule 5 draft, I should say, was pretty smart, because they basically, they took a lot of dudes, and they took dudes who could help in Syracuse, and I noticed two especially who I wouldn't be surprised if they end up playing like a week or two in Queens. I wouldn't be surprised. Being, especially one, the reliever that I'm going to choose could be a swing guy if things get really desperate because the bullpen depth is pretty thin, and the outfielder that I'm going to choose, there's no upper outfielder minors depth at all. Like, it's completely empty. So he's probably already the best one. So anyway, instead of teasing these guys for, like, dragging this out as much as it as I am, let's get into them. So the first person I'm choosing is Drew Ferguson. Drew Ferguson is, he's already 28 and hasn't been in the majors, which is, well, those are two about the biggest red flags you could get for a prospect. So I'm not exactly expecting the sun, moon, and stars from this guy. But the reason why I chose him and the reason why I find him interesting is because he's hit, not interesting, but the reason why I think people should know who he is he's hit at every level of the minors. He has almost 2,000 plate appearances in as a minor leaguer over 5 years. And he has a 293, 394, 452 line. He split his time pretty evenly among the three outfield spots, playing over 1,300 innings in center, over 1,000 innings in left, and over and almost 1,000 innings in right, at right in the 900 level in his right field innings. So the reason why I think he should be on people's radars in terms of the Mets is right now they don't have any outfield depth. Their fourth outfielder is Dom Smith as we sit here on December 27th. And he's no outfielder as much as I love Dom. So if something were to happen and there's injuries and you got to put McNeil out there and then you got to move everyone around on the bench, this is the type of guy who could get two cups of coffee as a Met in July and then a cup in August or something. Now, that's not ideal. That's not what you want from a 28-year-old minor league journeyman, but that's where we are as a Mets organization right now. We're in the very early stages of building this depth, and it's someone who's hit at the minor league level, at least not like at an incredible Mike Trout-like clip or anything. He's not blowing the cover off the wall, but it's solid number. Like, he's a better minor league hitter than most minor league hitters are, because most don't even make the majors to begin with. And he's already gotten up to AAA and had a 800 and 836 OPS, which is right in his line for what he's always done. So this is the type of hitter he is. So, I mean, he plays all three outfield positions. He's swung the stick a little bit in the minors. And it's just one of those guys who you could kind of look at and be like, hey, I wouldn't be surprised if he gets like 20 at-bats or like 15 at-bats or something, you know? And that's really why in the COVID era sleeper type stuff, that's really what I think we should be looking at, because, I mean, I could talk about a million IFA guys, but we know less about them this year than even normal as people who are outside looking in the organization. Obviously, the organization has way more information, or they should. So, like, it's tough for us to really look at that younger level stuff. So I could see him being the type of guy who makes appearances in the majors, and it's just someone to keep an eye on. The second person, Jesus Reyes, is someone who has already made the majors. It's only five and two thirds innings to be exact, and he gave up two runs. But he's someone who's kind of interesting because, again, the Mets reliever depth is pretty thin. They pretty much only had one shuttle arm last year, and that was Drew Smith, who would just constantly get called up and get sent back down. And if they didn't have Drew Smith active, it was just a cornucopia of random people who are not really in the organization anymore. And Jesus Reyes might be one of those guys next year. We are going into a year that might be much longer, we hope, is going to be a much longer season than last year. Even if it's not the full 162 and it's a little delayed because of the vaccines not getting to players on time, or if there's other problems with the vaccines that we can't foresee right now all the way in April. I mean, also spring training could be pushed back and all that stuff too. There's a whole mess of problems that we still haven't faced. But there might be more arm fatigue from relievers this year than there was in previous years, and there might be more injuries from pitchers. And the Mets have pretty much set their bullpen more than I think most of us would like, because the bullpen wasn't very good last year. I mean, not to plug my own stuff, but I wrote an article about it, how if they're going to make more signings to this bullpen, they're going to have to start cutting people because everyone's under contract and a veteran. Nobody really has options except for Gesellman. So someone like Jesus Reyes, who they got from the Reds organization, a little background on him. He throws like mid-90s. He has a two-seam or four-seam or slider guy, which is pretty relievery. But he's an extreme ground ball pitcher. The lowest ground ball rate he's ever had in a minor league season is 51.2, and that was in 2018 in AAA. Everything above that is 55% or above, and 1 year in AA, he had a ground ball rate of 67%. So he's not going to strike out the world. He only has a career high of 7.69 K per nine, but he's going to keep the ball on the ground, and he's the type of guy who I could see getting random appearances over the course of an 162-game season or 140-game season, whatever we end up getting, because, I mean, that's just how it happens sometimes. Sometimes those quad-A-type relievers are the ones who get a week or two in August when everyone's hurt or someone is hurt or whatever the case may be. So the reason why I'm focusing on him is because he already has that small, very small major league experience, and him and True Smith are really the only shuttle arms that the Mets have off the top of my head that I could think of that would really be able to not get absolutely destroyed by major league pitching, by major league hitting. He also was an ex-starter, so it would be curious to see if he has much length to his game in terms of being able to pitch multiple innings. But yeah, that's really, those two guys are, they're sleepers in an alternate sense, I guess I would say. They're sleepers and not in the, I don't expect either of these guys to show up and become the next Mets starting outfielder or the Mets next seventh inning guy or eighth inning guy or closer, whatever the case may be with relievers. But these are two guys because of where we stand today in late December and how the Mets have signed people and how slow the market's been. They still don't really have a lot of depth there, and they're basically one or two outfield injuries away from someone like Ferguson being on the 26 man roster, and they're a reliever or two injury away from Jesus Reyes being their sixth inning guy or fifth inning guy, whatever the case may be, a middle reliever. So it's not exactly the ideal situation, and it's not really exciting sleepers, but they're two dudes that really I want to highlight and focus on. So if in the event that they do get called up and people are like, it's kind of to be like, oh, I've heard that name from somewhere. The Mets don't really have a lot of impact in the minor league system, as we've discussed on this podcast and we've discussed elsewhere, because their impact guys are very young and far away. So these are the type of guys who, as the Mets system sits right now and as the Mets depth is right now, could be people we see in Queens for cups of coffee that, honestly, that's impressive, and it's good enough scouting to find those guys at this point in the offseason.
And that's our show for the week. And if anyone has any questions, comments, whatever, you can send us an email at our email address from complextoqueens@gmail.com. And or you could follow us on Twitter and shoot us questions there. I'm at Steve Saipa. Lucas is at ElVlahos343. Ken is at Ken1191. And Thomas is at SadMetSeason, SZN. Subscribe to the podcast wherever you get your podcast from. Rate and review it. And of course, thank you for listening. And we'll be back next week with the 2021 Mets top prospect list. Sounds so good coming out of my mouth. So until then, love the Mets. Love the Mets.